Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Vimeo Deese. Welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast episode. Finally, we are on the cusp of knowing who won this very long, absolutely long process. Let's be very frank about this. It took a lot to get here. There's a question that I think we all have to answer, though, in order to really set the rudder for this country towards the bright future, which we know we have. I'll get to that in a second. I want to discuss very quickly what happened with Bernie Sanders, why so many smears have come out now. Obviously, people are not stupid. You know why they did this. You know why Elizabeth Warren attacked. You know why the media attacked and why they waited till right now. Because they want these attacks to be fresh in people's minds. They are trying to, for their own benefit, destroy Bernie Sanders. I hate to even have to do this, but they're trying to destroy him by using the media structures against him so that they then can still be the kingmakers of the president. Not understanding that they are destroying themselves. You know what frightens me about this? Because they are destroying themselves. They are setting the stage for the rise of a balance counterbalance mechanism where you have the fascists and then you have, I don't even know who's on the other side of that, but these people do not understand that they are setting the stage for some intense internal conflict. What worries me significantly about all this is Chris Hedges back 10 years ago used to talk so much, I believe, about his time in Yugoslavia and how Yugoslavia, Kosovo, one of the two, and how he would be in these bastions, these middle class bastions of, I mean, these were some pretty wealthy people who had this idea in their mind that what they were hearing about the country descending into chaos, descending into poverty, descending into civil war wasn't happening. And so when he would go to these places and he'd be talking to these people and he'd be and they'd be laughing, and you know, maybe not overtly laughing, but saying, oh, it's absolutely rubbish, the garbage that they're saying on TV, where, you know, this fight is happening, that fight is happening, and there's this atrocity happening and that atrocity happening. Things are great here, so things have to be great everywhere else. And he'd look at these people and say, no. I just came from there, and those things are happening. And these people wanted nothing to do with that reality. Nothing to do with that reality. They denied it and denied it and denied it until they couldn't. And the point when they couldn't deny it was when tanks started rolling into their communities. Their reality was shattered. Their reality was shattered. And this is truthfully what I think is happening now. Is because these people are not experiencing poverty, experiencing the dread. I mean, with poverty comes dread, comes depression, comes powerlessness, comes an exhaustion that goes straight to your bones. Every day for some people is a struggle to live. Poverty is rough because these people aren't around that, because they don't have to be in those communities where drugs have been flown in, devastating the community. And I know that sounds so crazy. Read the Gary Webb book, guys. Just go read the Gary Webb book. Because they're not experiencing the mountaintop removal that's happening in Appalachia. Because they're not experiencing the horrible water crises that not only is in Flint, come to find out, but all over the country. Because these things aren't happening to them. Because these pressures aren't choking them. They just can't be real. They can't be true. That's ridiculous. How can they be true? They're not happening to them. They are setting the stage for something horrific, and they don't even realize it. They think this is a game. They think that this is something to play with, that it doesn't have real-world consequences. That you're not literally talking about tens of millions of people's lives. This is a plaything for them, because everything's good for them. They don't get it. I think it was David Koch who had said that he feared that the wars overseas was creating an atmosphere for war at home, civil war at home. The problem with that analysis, I believe it was David Koch, who I think is passed on now. The problem with that analysis, and truthfully, if it is David Koch, because I believe it is David Koch who said it, and he's the one who passed away, maybe it was because he got closer to the grave that he was able to see that. It has been said by some people in my community, the older ones, that when you get close to that grave, you start seeing the future. You start perceiving the future. The future is only a reflection of modern decisions, of current decisions, backed up by other decisions that were made in the past. The future actually doesn't exist. But based on continuous decisions that are made throughout a time period, the future can be set in stone. So it's possible that he was viewing this problem in the future and said, no, we got to stop this. This is going to have a horrific effect on the American public. And he's right to be concerned, ladies and gentlemen. The only problem with his analyses, and maybe he made this privately, but he didn't say it publicly, is that his brother helped to create this atmosphere. Newt Gingrich helped to create this atmosphere. As smart as that man was, his legacy will be tarnished because of what he created in the 80s through the 90s. As smart as he was, his legacy will be forever tainted. He ripped this country apart with his philosophies. I started off by saying that there's a question that we need to ask. and we need to also answer. That question is one that I do not hear other people talking about, and I can't believe that they haven't gotten to the point where they've said, you know something, everything that we're talking about, I don't care whether we're conservative or progressive or socialist, really boils down to this one question. And it really does boil down to this one question. We've been having this, anti-government peoples, because, you know, nihilist people who hate the government, they always frame every question to fit that anti-government narrative. So the question that they tend to always ask is, should government be involved in your life or should it not? Should it have this ability or that ability or this ability or that ability? Basically, what they're doing is they're hearkening back to the beginning of the country when the argument was anti-federalism versus federalism. And that's basically the argument that they're having. Are we anti-federalists or are we federalists? It's the wrong question. Why? Because it's been settled. You'll always have a power vacuum in a state, which I don't, you know, the phrase state is such a weird, because a state is so many different things, but in a country, you're always going to have a power vacuum where you need to put something there. And the power vacuum, just like every other organ in the universe, the power vacuum is at the center of that structure. A cell has a nucleus. A organ, if you dissect it, there is something that always drives it forward, that tells it what to do. The human body has a brain. That's at the center of its power. It has a couple of other power centers, but that's another structure. The brain still runs everything. Now, when it comes to a society, you are always going to have at the core of that society some structure running it, running the institutions that are necessary for the society to survive. Now, forgiving the whole concept of what those institutions are, we have to answer the question of what is going to be in that center. Back during America's beginning, the question was anti-federalist or federalist. Should we have a federal power at the center or should we not? The states' rights argument is the anti-federalist argument. It is the concept that we do not need a federal structure at the center of the country, which is weird because even when a lot of those states' rights broke off to form the Confederacy, they still had somewhat of a central federal power. But this is not, ladies and gentlemen, the question that I'm alluding to. But it is an important one that we need to recognize that we're still having. The people on TV, most of them are anti-federalists. They have a problem with the federal government being involved in the management of citizens' lives. Maybe they would be for the federal government being involved in the management of states' lives, but not in the citizens' lives. And they have many different reasons for holding that position. The question, though, that moves beyond are you a federalist or an anti-federalist, the question that I alluded to is, what is the role of government in society? There are many aspects of society. We, as a citizenry, have to decide what is the role of government in society. That is the ultimate question that nobody wants to bring up. And that is really the question that is at the heart of many of the protests that we are seeing erupt throughout, well, over the past 2 or 3 years. When we talk about climate change, we are talking essentially about that question. What is the role of government in not only handling climate change, but regulating how we interact with nature? That's the ultimate question. That is the ultimate question that we are alluding to. When we talk about our election system, we are talking about how governments interact with the populace to create the mechanisms for voting. Now, there's a second question, which conservatives, corporate conservatives, are deathly aware of and deathly afraid of. And that is the question is, what is the role of the citizen in the governing process? What is the role of the citizen in the governing process? Equally important, but you cannot even start to try to answer that question if you do not know the role of the government in society. And again, that is the question that nobody wants to pose. It is the question at the heart of Bernie Sanders' campaign. It is the question at the heart of Joe Biden's campaign. Joe Biden does not believe that the government should have a overly heavy, or should possess a overly heavy role in regulating society in various ways. That's who he is. Whereas Bernie Sanders, from being a democratic socialist, says, no, government, contrary to what Ronald Reagan said, is the answer here. And we can make some significant progress in helping to level out the society if government would come in and do some things that are beneficial for the mass of the people. The question, what role does government hold, what role does government have in society, is the question that is even hidden in the Declaration of Independence. Many people interpret the Declaration of Independence as a democratic document where they were determining that, look, you've had your time over there to tell us what to do, but now we're going to tell ourselves what to do, and, you know, that's what they interpret it as. But, at the same time, they were arguing, if you look at the list of items that was included with the Declaration of Independence, what you'd see is a lot of domestic issues that they had a problem with, and that perceivably government should be more responsive to if it was more responsive to their needs. Thus, they were saying government should have a role to play, either favorably or against, in these myriad of ways. We are treated to an argument which says that government should not have a role to play in any aspect of economics, which, ladies and gentlemen, economics touches every aspect of your life. So in essence, what they have done is constructed an argument to say the federal government should be done away with. The federal government should be done away with. And because we are so busy
fighting each... We're busy fighting a million battles. We don't have any time to look and say, all right, what is the unifying problem here? And the unifying problem, ladies and gentlemen, I've stated it before, I'm stating it again here. The unifying problem is that a group of people who did not like the fact that there was a federal government produced and made have determined to rip down the federal government and to replace it with something, I hate to tell you, akin to fascism. When you remove a power structure like a centralizing government, then you have to replace it with something. And look, these people know it. CIA knows it. They've overthrown dozens of governments and replaced it with corporate stooges. So, what do? You, one, get the populace to move against whatever entity it is that you're trying to destroy. You get them to remove the popular leaders. You get them to elect leaders that are only going to destroy the government or the institution, the institution. And then you watch as those people, those nihilists, destroy the government, which then makes the public turn even more viciously against that institution. So now there's a struggle going on within the populace to try to put more and more people in that represent their feelings. Not their thinking, but their feelings. And their feelings are conflicted because they put in a nihilist and then they were angry because the nihilist did what a nihilist does, which is destroy stuff. But they don't want it destroyed. They want it to work better. But the nihilist is telling them, if I destroy it, it'll work better. If I destroy it, it'll work better. Same thing, people hate when I make the comparison, but it truthfully is the same thing that I imagine cancer says to the body. Listen, if I destroy that, it's going to work out really well for you. Trust me on that. Just let me at it. It'll work out good. So they keep destroying it. People get angry about it. And so now they're putting in people behind the nihilists who don't have a clear vision other than we're going to try to do better. And then when the person isn't able to do better, because usually, you know, that lasts for like one cycle, one election cycle, which is two to 4 years, that person has to still deal with all the nihilists that are in there. So they fail, they get booted out for somebody else, and the frustration mounts and mounts and mounts until the whole system collapses, and the people who've been orchestrating it could put in who they really wanted to from the beginning, which is usually a dictator. They're doing this right now to Venezuela, and they've done it, they just did it with Bolivia, and with the Bolivian model, I want you to understand the role of Christianity in that new dictator's life. She's a woman, too, by the way. So all of you who want to tell me that women are always victims, I laugh at you. I laugh at you. Because she is a woman Christian fundamentalist, and I know many women that are just like her. And yeah, she's not an exaggeration of that type. She is that type. So their goal ultimately is to destroy the federal government. That's their goal. That is their 100% goal. The problem is with their goal is people are starting to wake up to it. Oh, they're starting to wake up to it. So what do they do now? Well, that's the other question. I want to return, though, to my original question. Because we, if we really want to change the course of history as they have designed it and defined it, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to answer the question. What is the role of government in society. What is the role of government in society? Now, I could start trying to list some things for you. But I really don't, I'm not going to do that. And the reason I'm not going to do that is because I think this is one where we all have to make a decision. We have to make a decision. What is it exactly that we are talking about? When we, this question that I just posed to you is so vitally important to what we are actually talking about. When we talk about economic issues, regulatory issues, banking issues, student loan issues, housing issues, bankruptcy problems of municipalities, that's something that Bernie Sanders hasn't really touched. Bankruptcy problems in municipalities. When we're talking about all these things, it comes down to the role of government. We are usually expressing concepts and opinions associated with these topics that don't keep in line with that question. So we can talk about personalities, Bernie, Trump, Biden, Buttigieg, all of them. We can talk about all of them without ever resorting back to this question. Because ultimately, I don't care whether you get Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg. It doesn't matter if you can't define what the role of government in a society is supposed to be. And I challenge to my conservative friends, answer me that. Don't just tell me, well, I'm for limited government. Okay, what does that mean? What is the role of government? Well, I think government shouldn't regulate the economy. Okay, that's fine. What does that mean? The economy touches so many tentacles, or touches its so many tentacles to every aspect of life. When you say you don't think the government should regulate the economy, okay, that's great. Then what role should it play in the economy? Well, I'm a libertarian. I don't think that the government should play any role in the economy. You're nuts then. And you're not thinking rationally. Because you're going to have some structure regulating the economy. You will. It will happen. Whether it's one person, two people, 10 people, a government, a group of corporations, it doesn't matter. You will have something regulating the economy. The question is, what is going to be there? Because if you're going to say nothing is going, the government shouldn't be there, then that's fine. What's going to be there? What's going to be there? And if you start talking about electing people to regulate the economy, you're talking about government. Fine. We're right back to the original question. What role is that group of people going to play in regulating the economy? This is the point, ladies and gentlemen. Everything we talk about comes down to the role of government in society. It does. And because we have been tricked for so long to see government as one way, which is, oh, it's a problem. Government has to be fixed because it's a problem. Not the corporations. The government has to be fixed because it's the problem. No. Government is going to be there. I used to always say this, but I used to say it as kind of like a terrible statement, which is that government is meant to govern. Because a government is meant to govern, you have to decide what and how it's going to govern. That government is a verb. It's an action. I know we typically think of it as a noun, but it is truthfully a verb. When you are describing something as a government, then, yeah, you might be able to get away with calling it a noun for a little bit, but ultimately it is a verb. You actively govern. You do things that because a government is supposedly for the populace, the common good, the commonwealth, things like that, you do things within a government that is going to have an impact on the common group, the common peoples. And so the question always comes up, what is the role of government in society? Out in California, they're having an actual conversation about this. There are people who want, I think it's called PNG, they want the state government to take over PNG, which is bankrupt. It's a utility company, for those of you who don't know. So people want them, they want the government, the state government to take over PNG, to run it efficiently and correctly, because the story of PNG is maddening, and it tells you exactly why corporations are a threat to the common good. If you don't know it, just type in PNG and wildfires and underground wires. They wanted to save money. It costs money to put wires underground, so they decided, we're not going to spend that money. We're going to put them overland, and they caused a lot of wildfires. So, but yeah, you should really look that story up. It's maddening. But they're having this conversation, and people ultimately are coming down on one side or another without answering that basic question. What is the role of government in society? If you believe the role of government is to stay out of the market so the market can be free, yay, it's a free market. You know, I kind of want to just take apart Adam Smith's Wealth of Nation in a series of these episodes. I really do. But anyway, if you believe that, okay, then you have to answer the question of what happens when a company is proven to have been as negligent as P&G. And what structure are you talking about proving it in? Because if you believe that government shouldn't have any role in the market, then the judiciary goes away. Because contrary to popular belief, the judiciary is a branch of government. Yeah, blows the mind suddenly, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, government is actually more extensive than just the president and the House of Representatives and the Washington, quote, bureaucracy. It's actually more extensive than that. Oh, yeah. There is so much with this that people, you know, they act like they get it and they don't. What is the role of government in a society? I laugh at people who are, you know, libertarians because, one, they're really two groups of people. One, they're disenchanted neoconservatives who are looking for something new to glom onto instead of realizing that what they are advocating, it's undoable. It's not logical and it's not practical. It's undoable. So instead of dealing with a reality that completely shuts that door, they just make, you know, they go to another ideology and philosophy. And then two, the second group that really wants it, they're fascists. They think corporations should run everything. But outside of that, I don't actually blame some of them. The fascists, I do blame them. But the rest of them, you know, it's difficult sometimes to change your mind. But that question that I keep asking, that you're sick of me asking, but it is so vitally important, what role does a government play in society, is at the heart of all of this. Bernie Sanders clearly believes that the government should play a bigger role in society than the Democratic establishment. Clearly. The question is, do you? And then defining that. What do you mean by that? If you believe that the government should play a bigger role, what exactly are you talking about? And, what branch of government are we talking about? Because most of the time when we think about government, we're talking about the executive and legislative and the bureaucratic branches. You know, those departments, which are, I guess the departments would be at the executive level, which, seriously, the constitutional frameworkers, the constitutional frameworkers did not give us a really decent way of creating that those structures. But what can you say? You know, they were trying. But it is it that question is so valid. It is so valid. When you have people running on TV talking about how horrible Bernie Sanders is, they're literally talking about they hate the New Deal concept of government regulating these structures which they make their money off of. In ways which, by the way, most of them know are just flagrantly bad. They're talking about what he represents. They're talking, when they say socialism, the reason why they demonize socialism is because they hate the concept of government being involved in regulating certain aspects of society. That's where they're at. That's where they're at. And we need to recognize that. Now, I know I've bothered you guys a lot because I just keep recycling this question. What is the role of government in society? I know it bugs you, but it is a question that needs to be raised. There was some books that I recently found on administration philosophy. And some of those books actually kind of talk about that. You know, they start hinting at what the role of the government is in society. One such book, which I would definitely recommend most of you get, if you have an interest in government policy, one such book that I would definitely recommend to you, and if you, you know, want to pass this along to somebody on Bernie Sanders' staff, you definitely could, because it's an older book, but it's a book that, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, when government was actually seen as a positive force, people wrote questions, and I'm sorry, I'm flipping through it right now. People wrote questions, not questions. They wrote books about how to make government work better. They wrote books on studies on how to make government work better. And we really need to go back and get in touch with some of this material. So the book that I'm talking about here is by Herbert A. Simon, and it is called Administrative Behavior, A Study of Decision-Making Processes in Administrative Organization. I got second edition. Administrative Behavior. Now, that brings me to a final point, which I'm only going to stay on very, very briefly, while I look around for the other book that I wanted to talk to you about briefly. The question also that we have to answer is how to make government more sleek and innovative. There are many things that government does well, and we really need to implement, because look, government's always being reorganized and stuff like that, but government really needs to be put on a 10-year plan of reorganizing it towards a set destination. That does need to happen, and we need to really do that ASAP. We really need to do that ASAP because, well, we will need it. Now, I don't know what happened to this other book title, but here it is. A book by William J. Gore. I have no clue if he's related to Al Gore. Called Administrative Decision Making, A Heuristic Model. William J. Gore, Administrative Decision Making. course, obviously, there's going to be much better books that are not as old as these two that I just gave to you. But the reason why I typically give you these books and why I like books that are much older is because most of these books were written in an age when this country was trying to solve problems. And it was dedicated to solving problems, not furthering confusion. It wanted to solve problems, and it and its academia wrote books that were true and honest about where those problems originated from, why those problems still persisted, and possibly how those problems could be solved. In the Powell Memo, which I really need to just get and read for you guys one day, he talks about the need for corporations to capture academia and to capture the colleges, the university settings. And one thing that I noticed, I'm not a big college sports fan, so I don't watch a lot of college sports usually. This past year, I did. I watched a lot of college football. And what became very clear to me was the role that corporations played in funding and advertising college sports. It just popped out to me severely. What did it for me was while I was watching the game, a team went to kick a field goal, and the net had a logo in it. The net had a logo in it, and that just blew my mind. I'm like, wait a minute, you're telling me that these people are branding so much that they're branding the nets that go behind the field goal posts? Oh, man. I mean, that's a lot of power for a corporation to have, or a group of corporations, as we've seen with Alec. The Powell Memo was prophetic. Academia has become captured in part by corporations. And academia can say what it wants to about corporations not having major influences on what it does. But the reality is, if the college knows that it's going to pull in $100 million, $150, $200 million, based on mostly football and basketball, you know, to keep other programs that don't make any money funded, they're going to kowtow a little bit to what those corporations want. So I give you these books because those are before the time when corporations had such a stranglehold on on colleges. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, I always love hearing from you guys. So if you really do, you know, just reach out to me. You can find my email address on the front of this episode. I include it on every single one that I do. I have still some stuff that I'm going to publish from 2019, so you'll be seeing that coming out, trickling out over the next couple of weeks. I am your brother, Vian Meredith. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you on the next one. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? The
these governments are killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a